Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose Colombo, right here for you on Colombo Chronicles Live. And yes, we do have a wonderful, wonderful guest today. She's a returning guest, and she is dynamic. Her name is Lori Golden, and that's Lori with an I, L-O-R-I, and Golden, like the golden books that we all cherish. And that's G-O-L-D-E-N, Lori Golden. And the name of her book is My House of Lies: Childhood Sexual Abuse, and boy, is child sexual abuse brutal. But Lori brings it all to light. And Lori is a psychotherapist and a successful psychotherapist. In fact, she's turned her life around, and now she works with survivors of trauma, abuse, and addiction. And I came across an article, and it was entitled America Has an Incest Problem by Mia Fontaine. And it was published back in January 24th, 2013. This problem, of course, is serious and on the minds of everyone after the government arrested, finally, Jeffrey Epstein, who they say committed suicide in maximum security, which makes it not so maximum or secure. And now they've arrested Ghislaine Maxwell and charged her as the groomer of the children who Epstein trafficked from around the world to St. James Island, also known as Pedo Island and Orgy Island, and Zorro Ranch. So this is going to be interesting, and of course it's on the minds of everyone, so today's topic is extremely timely, and My House of Lies is going to be extremely intriguing for you. Let me tell you a little bit more about Lori Golden. Lori Golden is passionate. She's passionate about helping both trauma and abuse survivors on their healing journey. Her work today is an outgrowth of her recovery from childhood incest actions. She has worked in the mental health profession since the 70s, earning her master's in social work from Hunter College in New York, and with later training at the Gestalt Institute. Eventually, she opened her own private practice. As a licensed clinical social worker, she combines various therapies. She has gained knowledge and experience in these therapies over the years in her practice. Lori Golden does not limit herself to one modality of practice, since her clients' needs vary. She believes there are many roads that lead to an individual's healing. In her private practice, she works with individuals, couples, and families, and out of recovery from drugs, alcohol, food, codependency, sex, love, addiction, as well as people who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder resulting from trauma and abuse. A special group of trauma survivors centers on her work with burn survivors and caregivers. Her first book, My House of Lies, is a memoir about her addiction, recovery, and overcoming childhood incest after 37 years of amnesia. More significantly, her book reveals a remarkable journey to seek the truth and reclaim parts of herself that were lost. And in a moment, we're going to be talking to our very special guest, Lori Golden, about her dynamic book, My House of Lies. But first, we're going to take a break. So don't touch that dial, because Columbo Chronicles will be right back to enter into the world of authors and experts.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Be sure to bring your appetite, because the Horseshoe Cafe is now open for breakfast and lunch. And in the future, they're going to see if they will be open for dinner again, depending on how everything's going around the world and in our country. So hopefully everybody will be open again soon. That would be the blessing, because that's healthy. It's healthy for people to be outside. It's healthy for people to be working. It's healthy for people to be playing in the sunshine, at the beach, at the parks. That is healthy. And hugging and kissing and holding hands, those are all healthy. But again, we have to follow the rules. And but we can pray and hope that normal comes back really soon, and we can get back to our lives and the American way of life. Right? Right. So now we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts, and we're going to invite our very special guest and welcome her, Lori Golden, the author of My House of Lies. And she is a dynamite, because she works with survivors of trauma, abuse, and addiction. So let's say hello to Lori and get started on authors and experts. Hi, Lori. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing good, Rose. I really am. It really is a crazy time, isn't it?
It is so crazy. And the topic is so timely, and your book is so timely, because it's on the minds of everybody today because of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell,
yes,
who was recently charged and arrested in the international trafficking of children over to Orgy Island, Pedo Island, St. James Island, Zorro Ranch, and so forth. So this is a very, very good time for people who didn't get much information about child trafficking and child abuse and trauma, and to share that information with them. So thank you so much for being a guest on Columbo Chronicles. And Lori, you have such a dynamic background and intriguing and interesting that could help so many people. And for those who don't know, do you want to share a little bit about your background for our audience?
Yes, yes. I grew up with incest. I'm a drug addict and a survivor of incest, as well as a psychotherapist. And I grew up in Merrick, Long Island, and had this nice-looking life on the outside. And at night, I was terrified. And I grew up with incest from the age of 5 until 16. So my whole book is about, and my whole, all the work I do is an outgrowth of my abuse. And I love that I've been able to put it to good use more than anything. Is there anything in particular that you would like me to share?
Yes. I would like you to share how your mother didn't know, and did you have any siblings that may have known or been abused as well?
Yes, I did have siblings, and no one, you know, when you grow up in a home where sexual abuse is occurring, everybody is an island to oneself. No one knows that the other child, the other sibling, is being abused. Very often, everybody is living in this secrecy. And so I thought I was the only one that was going through this. I never talked about it outside my bedroom. And it was later in life, when I got into drug recovery at 37, and years later, that my brother and my sister came out with they're being abused. And it was amazing to experience siblings who had lived in secrecy and them coming out for the, and sharing about this. It was really, I felt like I was imprisoned in my father's sexual deviation. You know, I felt like I was a prisoner held by him, captive. And I felt like I had a wall around me, and I couldn't tell anybody. So I couldn't tell my sister or my brother. I wondered if something was going on with them, but no one really, it's amazing how secrecy can create this wall between people. And my mother, did she know? Yes. She will say she didn't know, but the signs were there, and I saw her see the signs and not respond. Or if she did respond, like when I was a teenager, she found my father in my bedroom on a Saturday morning. And I remember so vividly in my recovery, I could see her eyes like kind of glaze over and a willingness to believe my father's lies. He made something up about why he was in the bed with me. He had been unable to sleep, and he was walking around the house. And are people aware of what's going on? Yes. But when no one is talking about it, you never know who's seeing what. But I confronted my mother after I got into drug recovery. And within 6 months, I started having memory. And I had amnesia with my abuse. So I really had no recollection before my drug recovery. And when I started getting flashbacks, I told her. And then I ended up calling Child Protective Services on my father, because he had access home at the time. And one of my sister's children was in his teens. And my father abused my brother as well as my sister and I. So I really knew where she stood when everybody in the family turned against me as if I was the bad guy. And I was the one that was scapegoated. And I really lost them in many different ways. I wasn't involved with my family for quite a few years. So did my mother know? I know she knew, but the denial is so incredibly powerful. It's like you see something and you just have a way of making it okay, even though it's not.
Justifying it in your mind and ignoring
yes.
it and moving on, it appears. And so do you believe, though, that, you know, back then, that, well, even until recently, people didn't really want to talk about incest or pedophilia, even though it's rampant in all governments, and or it wouldn't be going on to this degree.
Yep.
And Epstein would have been in jail a long time ago for good, and Ghislaine Maxwell. So look how long it takes for a society to actually address such an issue. And it's really not even resolved, because now they're pushing, I just read it recently, I think yesterday, they're pushing to make pedophilia normal in the USA so they don't have to go to prison and they can just continue on with their abuse. So these are all really serious problems. So your book is so timely, because people back then, wasn't it more like shameful and embarrassing to admit that your family wasn't perfect?
Yes, it was horrible. But you know, what's really important about child, especially childhood sexual abuse, and when you grow up and you are become an adult, it, no matter how exposed it is in the outside world, the shame that you carry is still living inside you. So it's still very shameful to open up and to talk and to tell people that you've been sexually abused. The shame, there's a level of shame that is part of the healing in recovery from this. The shame is embedded in your, John Bradshaw talked about this a long time ago. It's like a soul wound. And I know for me, a lot of my healing was about coming out and admitting and telling a group of people. At that time, I told in 1987, I told a group of people in Incest Survivors Anonymous that I was sexually abused by my father. And I realized at that time that I carried his shame. You know, his behavior became my shame. And I blamed myself. And that's what kids do. When no one's taking responsibility around them, they blame themselves. And they blame themselves because who else is there to blame? So you just assume, I assumed I was a dirty, bad little girl for letting my father do that to me when I became an adult and I started having memories. And it took time to understand I was a victim. I didn't let my father do anything. There was nothing I did that was wrong. But the perpetrators blame you. And they tell you basically that it's your fault, that what they're doing is not, they don't own this, that responsibility of what they're doing. So it's really intricate in this recovery. And the biggest issue is shame.
And what about the child? Did you feel guilty instead of your dad? Did you feel guilt? Like you did something wrong?
Yes. I've lived, you know, Rose, my whole life feeling like I did something wrong. And at 27, I tried to commit suicide. And I had my stomach pumps and I was hospitalized. No one knew I had been a survivor of sexual abuse back then, because it was in the 27. I mean, it was unheard of, yet it was going on. And so, you know, yes, I blamed myself so much, not even knowing what I was blaming myself for, because I didn't have any memory of it. My dissociation was so it protected me from really knowing the truth about myself. And then, of course, I was doing drugs so that I could further distance myself from the truth. So and it was all about being self-destructive, hating myself, feeling like I was guilty, not knowing. Every time I was around my mother, I felt guilt. Because I felt like I was always doing something wrong and I should be punished. And I never knew why. So it was the most insane experience to feel like you hate yourself, you want to kill yourself, using drugs as a form of slow suicide, and yet you're doing all these other things outside in your life, like I was working, I was traveling, I was skiing and sailing and scuba diving, and my life looked so good on the outside. And I was suffering so deeply inside myself that I didn't even know what I was going about. I just knew I was suffering.
Yes, and did you, because I've been told by people who have had traumatic experiences, a bad childhood, that they try to suppress everything and with the drugs and the alcohol and numb themselves out.
Yes. Yes. And it works until it doesn't work. And that's the problem with it. It creates alcoholism and drug addiction, food addiction, relationship, love addiction. I mean, all addictions create this, it's like an adult blankie. You know, you take your drugs and you're wrapped in this blankie and no one can hurt you. No one can get you. And you can alter any mood that you're in. It's very powerful. You know, if you're lonely, you can take something. If you're feeling dumb, you can take an amphetamine or snort a line of coke and feel smart. If you don't have energy, if you have trouble sleeping, so you can alter all of your moods. But under that is dissociation, because when you grow up with abuse, you have to find a way to live in your home. And the only way to do it is by removing yourself from the experience of being abused. And it's ingrained in people when they grow up with child abuse to detach themselves from the moment, not be in what they're in. And there's many different ways people are able to do that. But then you reach a certain point in life, which I did, where action saved me initially, because it was the answer to my pain that I was carrying but didn't understand what it was. So it was an answer. It was a solution until it became a noose around my neck. And then it took over.
Wow. And so did you go into recovery? Is that what you did?
Yes. In 86, I moved from New York to San Diego, and it was called the Geographic, and I hit a bottom. Instead of thinking I was the problem, I thought New York was the problem. The buildings, the lack of nature, I felt like my feeling, increasing feeling of being trapped in my apartment was because I was, you know, I didn't have access to the outside. You make excuses for everything you're going through. So I thought, okay, I'll move and I'll be in nature, more in nature, scuba diving, doing things I love to do. And I got here, and sure enough, what I did was hit a bottom. And within a year of getting here, I realized that I was in incredible terror and incredible pain. I didn't understand it, but I just knew I didn't want to live anymore. And that's when I connected with a 12-step program. Somebody who was the manager of my apartment building took me to my first meeting because she recognized, because she was in recovery. And I'll tell you, Rose, the first time I admitted, I realized, because I flushed my pills down the toilet, I flushed whatever drugs I had, and I laid on my floor in the bathroom sobbing. And I really knew I couldn't go on, but I didn't know what to do now. And when I got to an NA meeting, Narcotics Anonymous, and I said, "Hi, I'm Lori, I'm an addict," it was like the first time I actually heard my name. It was really incredible. And I realized oh my God, I must be lying about everything in my life. And I really was, because I really painted this beautiful, picture-perfect life growing up in Merrick, and that's what I thought was my home life. We went skiing and boating, and we did all those things, you know, camping, and all of those things I've learned and I'm grateful for as an adult. But I only held on to the picture-perfect image. And that's what we do. We create a way of a picture for ourselves. And often that picture is completely based in lies. So it's really quite an experience to step into recovery from addiction and sexual abuse, especially when you've had amnesia. And I mean, I couldn't have told you even a day before I said I was an addict that I was a sexual abuse survivor.
And so, but you have to be willing to take
yes.
those recovery steps. Isn't that a big part of it?
Yes, it's a huge part of it, because you have to be willing to seek the truth. And you have to be willing to get honest. And, you know, my book, what I love about my book for myself is that it shows the courage of a child growing up in a family with sexual abuse. And I become an adult in recovery who then gets in touch with more courage again, because I think of post-traumatic stress disorder not as a sickness, but as a brilliant way to cope. I don't think of this as a sickness.
Mm-hmm. And also, I know that you say that sexual abuse has long tentacles. What does that mean?
It means that you never are free of it. You grow up and you become an adult, but you're never free of the effects of the abuse. And those effects show up in your daily life, and they're dysfunctional. Adults need to understand that they're still protecting themselves from the abuse that happened in their childhood. And they have to understand that the past isn't in the past. You know, when people come in and they say to me, why do I have to dredge this up? I don't want to I've already lived, those are people who remember that they were abused. And they'll say, I already lived through it. I don't want to have to talk about it. And I help them try to see that it's alive in the present. You know, the past isn't in the past. The past is how you live today. And it comes out in all areas of our lives. We think that we're not living in the effects of the abuse, but we are. So, for instance, if you were physically abused as a child and you're in a job and your boss raises his voice and you suddenly shut down, that shutting down is your history. You learned as a child to shut down from the physical abuse or the violence that you experienced in your home. You learn to shut down to protect yourself. So here you are, an adult, and you're still shutting down. And when you shut down, you don't have a voice. And if you don't have a voice, then you can't stand up to someone who's being, particularly someone who's not being respectful. You don't know how to say that's not okay, because you shut down and you lose your voice. So it's not in the past. It becomes a part of who we are and how we cope in today. And those coping strategies really were developed in childhood.
And do you think that that abusers are sociopaths or psychopaths without conscience?
I think there's I do think there's sociopaths, and I do think there's psychopaths, and I do think I do think of it in when you're abusing a child, I just think of that as there's good and evil. And I really do think that there's evilness in this. There's people who are, it's an addiction for people. So yes, pedophiles are addicted to whatever their drug is, which is sexually abusing children. That's their drug. When they're depressed, when they don't feel good about themselves, when they want to assert their power and inflict harm on somebody, on a child, and they justify their actions like any addiction. But I think within addiction, there's a multitude of different kinds of people. So is everyone a psychopath? No. Is everyone a sociopath? No. But everyone who is in a pedophile is in a practice of sex addiction. No question about it. An addiction of some sort.
And
I just think it's sex.
Do you think that, there have been, like, correction officers in female prisons who have raped prisoners, you know, and do
Absolutely.
You think that they are probably abusers in their own family lives, or is it just something that they have a secret about and just act out because they're in power in those prisons?
Well, you know, you think about people, you know, I always like to think about Hitler. You know, he had his own little family, you know, and look what
yeah.
he did to this society of people. I mean, I think people are capable of abusing on the outside and coming home and living a seemingly a good life, a presentable life.
Mm-hmm.
But I doubt that they have never abused within their home. I can't imagine, because if you abuse, you that's in you. You don't have a healthy way of coping in life. And if you don't have a healthy way of coping in life, you don't know how to handle things and manage your feelings. So
right.
I think... All, look what just happened recently with the Olympic Association. There has been many, doctor, get his name right now, Larry, I'm not going to get the right name. He, a lot of people who trained, girls who trained for the Olympics was being abused by the doctor.
Right. That was disgusting.
And so, yeah. And this happens all the time in big organizations.
I read that the abusers generally know the family or are somehow, you know, targeting that family for some reason because they're associated with that family somehow. Like a neighbor or a friend or a family member or even a political person or a business, you know, a boss who
right.
Who may, you know, be even a judge. I mean, there are judges who
matter.
Are pedophiles. It doesn't matter. It could be any walk of life. And so this to me is like super frightening for children because you don't know which teachers, which judges, which lawyers, which political persons, which family member could possibly, or a neighbor, because we're so trusting. At least we were in the past. I think we may not be as trusting because we want to be, but now we're becoming more aware because of books like Lori Golden's House of Lies. So do you think that there's a way for people to protect their children today?
Yes, as long as they don't go into denial. As long as they recognize some the warning signs. A lot of times what happens to parents, and it's understandable, so many things are going on in our lives, and your child is suddenly withdrawn, or your child is acting different in some way, and you notice this, but you can't put your finger on it. You don't know that this child, your child, may be being abused by a church, or abused by a teacher, or abused by an organization of some sort. And a lot of times, children don't have the words for it, because they shouldn't be having sex with adults. They're not geared to have sex. They're not geared to, they don't know what that stimulation means. So they don't even have the words to really, a lot of times, talk about it. So I think if parents notice a shift or a change in their children, they have to take a look at what that is. They have to begin to question, what is going on? Is there something that's occurring that they don't know about outside of their home? Because the first people to recognize that something is occurring is within families. But, you know, kids are also very good at hiding this. You know, they're not experts, but they can be good at keeping the secret because they're threatened. So parents will say what's wrong, and they want to know what's going on with their child, and their child will continue to keep the secret and say nothing. But I think if you're noticing something, then you need, what happens is parents, when their child says nothing is happening, parents sometimes are quick to believe what their child is telling them. And what they have to do is pay attention to their own discomfort and trust what they're seeing, that they don't know exactly what's going on, but that they're noticing signs of something going on. And that's what I try to help parents with. You know, parents know more than they think they know.
Wow.
And that's, and they have to really notice.
And so, Lori Golden, as we come to the end of our interview and your wonderful book, My House of Lies, what would you say would be the most important message that you as a psychotherapist and a successful psychotherapist would want these parents to know?
What I would like parents to do is to make a list of what they are noticing in their children. I notice my child's more withdrawn. I notice my child seems to not enjoy some things that they used to enjoy. Write down what you notice, because that is crucial. And if you don't understand what you're noticing, then you reach out for help and share with somebody. Share with, if you can't share with an organization or a counselor or a priest, or sharing what you're noticing will help you to be more confident that what you're noticing is what you're actually noticing, and not believing that your child, what your child is telling you, that they're okay no matter what you think. I just think writing down what you're noticing and then reaching out for some kind of help to make sense of what you're noticing, not ignoring it.
I think that is such a great piece of advice, because we weren't getting that in the past, and none of this advice, actually, we were not getting it in the past, and we didn't have the internet, and we didn't have shows that would allow you to provide this information to the public as educational and informative, so they can take these steps and actually try them and see if they can use them and save some children from suffering abuses all alone. And I know that you must believe that it's also very unhealthy for those children to feel isolated and alone and guilty and ashamed of something they aren't even responsible for.
No, no. But they, again, you can't, you're not, it's the kids are afraid to tell parents very often because they know something happened that's not supposed to happen. Kids are amazing
right.
at knowing that. They really are.
Yeah. So your advice is, like, super important. I like that. I mean, where you're actually putting down a date and the difference you're seeing in the child, which we were
mm-hmm.
never taught as parents. And I think, you know, that is a very, very important piece of information for every parent because two parents are working today. It's really, really hard to make ends meet. And then you're
yep.
tired and keep up with all this. But if you had a journal and you began noticing these things, how much more helpful you could be to that child, to the teacher, and go and get some sort of counseling, like you said. And speaking of counseling, now is your time to shine. Lori Golden, author of My House of Lies. And you can tell us how people can get in touch with you, any websites, phone numbers, how they could seek out your counseling, and how they can purchase your book, of course.
Yes, I'd love to. I'm available at 858-215-2326. I'm available at LoriGoldenAuthor@gmail.com. And also LoriGoldenAuthor.com, where my website is. And on my website, there's a way to purchase my book from Amazon. And my book recently just came out in audio, and I love how she did my book. It really brings it to life, and she did a really good job. So, yes, I would... In any way people want to connect with me, I am absolutely open to talking to people. That's really what my mission in life is.
and it's a great mission. And so what about the audio? How did they get the audio copy?
On Amazon, on Audible.
Oh, that's perfect because you can listen while you're driving. You can listen
yeah.
while you're... You know, enjoying your stay at home now in the backyard,
yeah.
relaxing, and that's fantastic. I'm so happy for you, and I wish you so much success with all the work that you do on your mission and your journey. And we'll have to have lunch, Lori.
I know
you aren't that far from me.
I am making a commitment to call you. I really was thinking about you, and then Irwin. Just so happened, and it was like, wow, this is meant to, I'm meant to talk to her again.
And we're talking about Erwin Zucker, and he is
Aaron
he
Zucker.
Is a fantastic
yep.
public relations guy.
Yes, he really is. He really is.
And so, Lori, I want to say God bless you. Keep up the good work. And I'm going to get your audio off of the off of Amazon, and I suggest everyone else do the same or purchase the book, My House of Lies. And we can all be more aware, and not just for children, but if you're a grandparent, you can help your grandchildren too. And
yes.
Isn't that the truth? Absolutely.
Yes, we just need to be educated.
Yes, and that's what you are doing. You're educating people on looking for the signs so that we can protect the children. And God bless you, Lori, and then I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Thank you, Rose. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Lori Golden, and that's about L-O-R-I, and Golden, like the Golden Books, G-O-L-D-E-N. Author of My House of Lies. She's left the building. She is a psychotherapist. She left her phone number with you. You can go on Amazon, check out her audio, buy it, and her book, My House of Lies. And you are so fortunate because you can take Lori's experience and information that has turned a children who have been abused or adults who have been, are being abused or have been abused. You can be a child, a teenager, an adult who still needs help and to overcome whatever trauma you suffered or abuse, addiction. And you can contact Lori, give her a call, make an appointment, or you are lucky because you now have steps on how to help yourself and your children and your family and maybe your grandchildren and their families. So it's all about people helping people and sharing information. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back. We'll be leaving the wonderful world of authors and experts and returning into the wonderful world of Rosa's commentary. So don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up to Columbo Chronicles Live because we have fantastic information for everyone around the world. And then, of course, the online radio podcast does reach around the world. That will be taped live, not live, but taped live. It's live in the USA. And so let's see what's happening around the world and in our own country, because we have information here that you probably don't hear. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery, and 100% of the Republicans supported that. 23% of the Democrats supported it. So it was 100% of the Republicans voted to abolish slavery, and 23% voted to abolish slavery. On the 15th Amendment, the right to vote for all, blacks, Native Americans, Americans, everybody. Right to vote for all, the 15th Amendment, 100% of the Republicans voted yes, they approved of it. 0% of the Democrats supported the right to vote for all. Think about that. We have Black Lives Matter. We have Communist Antifa. We have the Democrats funding them. We have George Soros and his Open Society funding them. And the Democrats did not vote for the right to vote for all. And they did not vote, except for 23%, which is a very small percentage. they failed to vote for abolishing slavery. On the 14th Amendment, which gave citizenship to freed slaves, 94% of the Republicans voted yes. They voted for it. They approved it. 0% of the Democrats supported giving citizenship to freed slaves. On Obamacare, 0% of the Republicans supported it. 86% of the Democrats supported Obamacare that they didn't tell you included worldwide mandated taxpayer-funded abortions. In fact, they said it did not include that. And it included mandated taxpayer-funded abortions worldwide. And that meant that Americans were required to pick up the tab worldwide to depopulate natural-born citizens around the world, especially in third-world countries such as Africa, India, China, where there are billions of people, over a billion people in each of those countries. And to put in Planned Parenthood clinics and the abortion pill, make it available, which Bill Gates and George Soros and the New World Order all support in Africa, India, along with all their vaccinations in those countries, to reduce the population of their countries. In fact, Farrakhan just came out recently, and I'm not a fan of Farrakhan, but I agree with him on the mandated taxpayer-funded vaccinations that have no scientific or medical proof, evidence, published studies, short or long-term, on the benefits or the direct adverse effects on a human body, whether it be race, gender, ethnicity, health issues, whether it be a vaccination that could directly and adversely affect specific persons or masses of persons, death with chronic illness, paralysis, or depression and suicidal tendencies, depending on the chemical adjuvants that they add to the vaccine, and any other materials such as aborted fetal tissue, DNA, or the virus itself, whatever other materials they may include in the vaccine, have not been published, to the best of my knowledge. And Americans have a right, and the world has a right, to know what chemicals and materials, and if DNA and aborted fetal tissue and other materials, plastics, the virus, etc., are in the vaccine. They have a right to read the short and long-term case studies that include the direct adverse side effects that could happen to some or many or millions. Bill Gates said that after the first vaccines are forced on the world, that 15% of the population could die. And later he stated on video that 10 million people could die, but he's saving lives. And
then, of course, India and Africa are resisting because after WHO and Gates went into India, India's newspapers and some articles in the USA, which are not so easily found any longer on social media, stated that they were forced to leave India because Bill Gates, who's seen on video vaccinating children, and he doesn't have a medical license, but no one cares because he's a billionaire. Anyone else? Well, we know what would happen to anybody else. They reported that there was an overwhelming number of children who died, who were made sterile, and who became paralyzed, or they became deeply depressed and suicidal. And in Texas, the Gardasil also was mandated by Governor Perry, and teenagers died, mostly teenage girls. Some died, and some suffered from paralysis. So they reversed the mandate. So Americans have a right, a constitutional right, to know what is included in a vaccine. I'm not anti-vax. I want to know what's in it. And you should want to know what's in it, too. I want to read the short and long-term case studies that prove the benefits or the direct adverse side effects that could possibly cause death, according to Bill Gates, up to $10 million people on the first round. So is that depopulation? Is that genocide? What is that? If you are not going to provide the information on the vaccines and the materials included in the vaccine and the case published scientific and medical case studies informing the American people and providing them a choice under which authority does the Democrat Party, mostly Bill Gates, Dr. Fauci, WHO director, CDC director, or Dr. Birx have over any American who is a free person to force them to be vaccinated when none of them are elected officials? And even if you're an elected official, where in the Constitution does it grant them a dictatorial, totalitarian job duty or constitutional authority to force anyone against their will to be assaulted with a needle and unknown chemicals injected into their body? Well, I think you should read a bill. Illinois Governor Pritzker, who is a billionaire, who happens to own hotels, Hyatt hotels, in Wuhan, China, and who happens to be co-owner or heavily invested in testing kits involving the COVID-19 and the vaccinations, which is a huge conflict of interest considering his position as Illinois governor. And the article says he's on the verge of dictatorship. And you'll never believe what lawmakers are wanting to do, according to Freedom Headlines. Well, lawmakers in Illinois are trying to pass legislation that would give Governor J.B. Pritzker, the billionaire,
who's invested heavily in Wuhan, China, and testing kits and hotels, the power to confiscate practically anything he wants or needs during a state of emergency like we have right now. That would wipe out the Constitution. You'd have no rights, which is what the New World Order is pushing. No rights. No liberties. No freedom. You will do as you are told. I think they've been in communist China a little bit too long. The new bill proposed explains how and what the Illinois dictator can confiscate from you. State of emergency. This has to be fought in the court. You can read the proposed legislation. It is S like Sam or Senate, B like boy or bill, Senate Bill 3993, Section 7, Emergency Powers of the Governor that he is granting to himself. And you need to read it. And you need to call his office. You need to call your representatives in the Congress and the Senate and oppose a communist dictatorial bill that would grant him authority to confiscate whatever he pleases, even if it's a fake national emergency that doesn't even reach a pandemic. But through fear-mongering and through recording every case and every death as COVID, that increases the numbers, because they must have excessive numbers in order to call out a pandemic and quarantine Americans. And there is no indefinite quarantine, to my knowledge, to the best of my knowledge from my research. It says up to 60 days. So why are millions of Americans permanently out of work or temporarily out of work, losing their homes, losing their vehicles because they can't make the payments, losing their businesses? Why is this happening in America? Americans need to get it together. Filing recalls, you need to become proactive. You need to, if BLM can organize and Antifa can organize and they can gather and herd all over the country while they're robbing and burning down cities and killing people and body slamming senior citizens and veterans and teenagers on the ground and stomping on them, and nobody cares, then we, the American people, the natural-born Americans, this is our duty, our obligation to protect our nation and the Constitution of the United States of America. And people like Governor Pritzker from Illinois needs to be recalled. And he needs, and his, if his law, his bill was to pass, then it needs to be fought in the courthouse by we the people in a class action lawsuit, by after seeking legal advice from lawyers who are willing, Constitution of the United States. Because we the people are the government. They are temporary employees of we the people. We mustn't forget who we are. We are the government. We the natural-born Americans, not the naturalized Americans, because all immigrants, whether legal or not, can be deported back to their countries if they commit treason or traitors or misdemeanors and high crimes and sedition. So natural-born Americans need to step up to the plate. It is our duty, our obligation to stop this takeover of and confiscation and overthrowing of our land, our Constitution, our God, our liberty, our rights, our freedom, our right to work, our right to earn a living. Governor Newsom
refuses to answer questions about his blind trust involving his restaurants and his wine winery on why he's receiving so many stimulus checks, COVID stimulus checks, as governor of the state of California with five members of Congress, including his aunt Nancy Pelosi in Congress as a Speaker of the House, and they're all granting him these loans for his businesses. And he kept his winery and his restaurants open during the 4th of July weekend. Well, he ordered all the restaurants in California, especially the beach restaurants and bars, where they make all their profit to cover them for the winter when business slows down. That's when they make their profit to cover their expenses for the coming winter months when businesses slow down. And he shut them down. And he kept his open. Recall Pritzker and recall Newsom. Natural-born Americans, naturalized Americans, join in. If you are loyal to America, join in and stop this dictatorial, totalitarian, authoritarian Democrat Party from overthrowing our Constitution and imprisoning Americans in their homes who are not sick. And on that note, I'm going to say, God bless you. God bless America. Fight back for your country. Fight back for your Constitution. Fight back to protect and preserve law enforcement in our country. First responders, ICE, Border Patrol, secure borders, and vote for President Trump and vote for the GOP. Or else you will not be free. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. God bless you, and stay safe and healthy.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.